call the doctor.
Construction Development Services Inc. against Modern Environments Inc. Brian and Jason to the accountant, Thomas S. Farms to the accountant.
You may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Brian Casey for Construction Development Services Inc., and I'll refer to them as CDSI during this argument. I'll reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal if I may. Modern Environments brought an action in federal court against CDSI, seeking damages that it also sought in this action. Modern settled that case and gave a release to CDSI of and from all claims for damages asserted in that action. That action was then dismissed with prejudice. That action was filed as a complaint for copyright infringement. Damages recoverable for copyright infringement include actual damages suffered as a result of the infringement. That's 17 U.S.C. Section 504B. So in that copyright action in federal court, Modern was asked in an interrogatory for an itemization of all damages sustained by the alleged infringement. And Modern gave an itemization in his answer to interrogatory, and that's found at page 231 of the appendix. After it released its claim for those damages, and that action was dismissed by the federal court, Modern then proceeded with this breach of contract action in the Virginia Beach Circuit Court, and also was asked in the circuit court action to itemize its damages also by way of an interrogatory. And it did so again, and that's at page 213 of the appendix. The itemized damages in the interrogatory answers were the same in both cases. The amounts were the same. The total of the itemized damages in both interrogatory answers was $91,534.60.
Can I interrupt you for a minute? I'm not sure I understand why the debate in the briefs rotates on whether or not damages are recoverable for these particular line items in a copyright suit in federal court, because the release says you release all claims for damages asserted, not all claims for damages recoverable.
Correct.
So you go to your interrogatory answer, your sworn interrogatory answer in federal court, and it says, itemize in detail all damages you claim. So does it matter at all whether or not we have to sit down with the copyright statute and a half a dozen federal cases on recoverable scope of damages to determine whether this release releases all claim for these damages?
It matters not, because the release is for all, as you said, the release is for all damages asserted in the action, the federal court action.
And that's not a res judicata point. It's just this is a settlement agreement. You shouldn't have signed it if you didn't intend it to be enforced.
That's exactly right. It's a release of all claims for damages asserted in the action. And it's undisputed that the itemized damages totaling $91,534.60 were asserted indeed in the federal court action. There's no dispute about that, and that's in the record.
Am I right that it's actually a verbatim? It's verbatim taken from the interrogatory answer and the damages asserted in the state court case total the same $91,534.60 with all the individual subparts to the dollar.
They do. Each separate itemized damage is identical in its description and in its amount in the corresponding interrogatory answers in the federal court action and the state court action. And of course, the total is the amount. There were, in the copyright action, Modern also said that its damages included the CDSI's profits. It didn't say that in the state court,
so
the contract action.
So the release is broader because it includes copyright infringement profits under the statute.
Correct. And it also, in the state court action, Modern said that it was entitled to contract interest, which it didn't say in the federal court action, but it never presented any evidence of that at trial and didn't pursue that claim. So all of the damages that Modern presented evidence of at the trial in Virginia Beach Circuit Court had already been asserted in the federal court action and had been released. There was no evidence presented in circuit court action for damages that had not already been claimed or asserted in the federal court action. No damages, no evidence of damages in the state court action that had not already been asserted in the federal court action.
Counsel.
Yes.
let me pose a hypothetical to you. It's going to sound perhaps like a bar exam question. Modern sues for copyright infringement in federal court for $91,000. A cause of action which it could not bring in state court. At exactly the same time, it sues in state court for breach of contract for $91,000, an action it could not bring in federal court. First part of my question is that permissible? Is there any bar to Modern doing that?
Probably not.
Okay. Now, Modern then takes both of those actions to judgment. Wins a judgment for $91,000 in each one of them. Second part of my question. If one of those judgments comes before the second, the other one, does that become res judicata in the second case?
It becomes res judicata if the claims in both actions arise from the same transaction or occurrence. Obviously, you've got identical parties. So that prong of res judicata is satisfied.
Yes, but you have a cause of action in each case that could not be brought in the other case.
Correct.
Okay, so is it still res judicata?
If it arises from the same transaction or occurrence. And actually, the cause of action in the circuit court could have been brought in the federal court under the federal court's supplemental jurisdiction. The federal court could have entertain the action for breach of contract in the same case as the copyright infringement claim. The copyright infringement claim obviously is restricted to the federal court, but the breach of contract claim could have been tried in the federal court. To get back to your question, the res judicata would have been, I'm skipping now from release, which was my first assignment of error, now to res judicata, which Your Honor's brought it up. The res judicata would have been applicable had the claims in your hypothetical arisen from the same transaction or occurrence, and there had been a final adjudication, dismissal, or adjudication on the merits in the first case.
Now, their response, I believe, would be that the transaction, it's not the same transaction or occurrence because the breach of contract was completed before the copyright infringement occurred.
That's their
argument. I understand that's their argument. That's it for my questions at this time, but you go ahead and...
Let me just, since you brought
well,
it up.
Well, if that's the case, is this really res judicata or is this simply a matter that would be resolved by contribution? Because it's the same damages.
Well, our first argument is that it's released.
Right.
That the claims...
I understand that. But to follow up with his... I'm asking, is that the right analytical vehicle to take, or is this really a question of a contribution in the actual collection of the judgment? Because it's the same damages.
Well, that's what I was going to ask him.
So that's a little premature, but maybe you ought to answer it as well.
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. We looked at it as a claim in both cases that arose from the same transaction or occurrence. In other words, what we have is a copyright claim that is based on a breach of contract for design services. In other words, without the alleged breach of contract for design services, there would be no copyright claim, because the design would have been used in the project, would have been used to fulfill the prime contract with the Navy. There'd be no claim for copyright infringement without the breach of the contract for the design services.
But the argument only goes one way. I mean, the answer only goes one way, because you can't get res judicata bar of a claim by a decision of a court that didn't have subject matter jurisdiction and potential jurisdiction over the claim. So if the state court action in the hypothetical went first, you couldn't bar the copyright infringement case. Now you can get right. You know, the double recovery argument, you can get the release argument, you can get collateral estoppel if you have specific findings, but not merger bar. But your earlier point, though, is to me more important, which is it does work in the opposite direction. Because of pendant ancillary jurisdiction, so that's what we called it in law school, supplemental to your age, But you can bring this action. It's asserted quite emphatically you couldn't bring the state court action in federal court. Of course you can.
Right. And so the res judicata argument works this way.
Right.
Because the first dismissal with prejudice occurred in the first adjudication occurred in the federal court, which could have subject matter jurisdiction of the judicata.
But as you can see from our questions, we are dancing around three very different ideas. Release has nothing to do with res judicata. Res judicata has nothing to do with release, and double recovery or contribution has nothing to do with either of the first two things.
It does, and my argument is you don't even have to reach the more complicated issues of res judicata and perhaps double recovery, although that's not, that doesn't seem to be as complicated, because we have a release on its face. Plain language, unambiguous, enforceable, not in dispute, validity is not in dispute, and it clearly states that it releases all claims for damages asserted in the action, and it's undisputed that the damages asserted in the action, that of those released damages, were then asserted in a subsequent action in state court. The president of Modern Environments testified to that, admitted to that in his testimony. So it's not just the interrogatory answers, it's also by his testimony at trial that he admitted to that. And the interrogatory answers say the same thing. And in fact, in the state court, the state court claim for breach of contract actually sought recovery for the cost of the very copyrighted design that the modern claimed was infringed in the federal court action. So we have a release. For the same transaction and occurrence argument for res judicata, we have claims that arise from where the plaintiff seeks the same damages for the same design work and the same lost profits for the same construction project for work under the same contract. And Modern even alleges in its federal court complaint that CDSI obtained the copyrighted design, quote, incident to the performance of the contract. That's at paragraph 8 of the federal court complaint. So in the federal court action, Modern alleges that the only way that CDSI obtained the design that they allegedly infringed was incident to the performance of the contract. So Modern's copyright claim is that CDSI breached the contract for design services by wrongfully terminating Modern from the project and then used that contracted for design without permission and without payment. Had there been no alleged wrongful termination, as I said before, CDSI would have been free to use that contract to perform and fulfill its prime contract with the Navy. In the breach of contract action in state court, the Modern's claim is that CDSI breached the contract, the same contract, by wrongfully terminating Modern from the project and failed to pay Modern for the same contracted damages that it claimed in the federal court action. So on these operative facts, we have claims, two claims, separate claims in separate courts, arising from the same transaction or occurrence between the same parties, where we've got a final adjudication on the merits, a dismissal with prejudice that acts for issue account purposes as an adjudication on the merits, and we've cited the authorities for that.
So you had wanted to reserve 2 minutes. You're down to 1:50. You can do it any way you want.
I'll reserve that.
All right.
May it please the Court, my name is Scott Carnes, and I represent Modern Environments. And I would respectfully disagree with the assertion that this release on its face plainly dismisses the breach of contract claim. The copyright infringement case sought recovery of damages that are prescribed and defined by federal statute. Pardon. And those are those damages that are a result of the infringement and any profits of the infringer that are attributable to the infringement.
Can I interrupt you there? Because you're, for me at least, you're right at the core of the issue. When I read your argument B, that the settlement only applied to claims for damage recoverable under federal copyright law, I thought, okay, I understand that, and contract damages are generally not synonymous with copyright. And then I read the release, and it doesn't say that. It doesn't say damages recoverable. It says damages claimed, And then they come in with a claim, a sworn claim, for verbatim the same damages. So if I were settling a case with you and I had that language in it, I would understand it to be directly applicable.
Well, Your Honor, the language of the release, of course, is that as to CDSI, Modern was releasing of and from all claims for damages asserted in the action being the copyright infringement.
Right, and the interrogatory answer says identify in detail all damages you claim to have sustained as a result of each of the violation of the copyrights.
And my position, Judge, is that, Your Honor, that interrogatory answers, deposition testimony, nor even trial testimony, establish what damages are recoverable in a copyright infringement.
I agree with you completely. I don't know if we're communicating, though, but I don't see why that matters. The release is whatever you claim. We don't have to sit down with copyright experts. Whatever you claim, I'm done, not going to pay them again.
The point I'm trying to communicate, sir, is that the claim for damages is that contained in the complaint, which fortunately seeks those damages that are permitted by statute to be recovered in a copyright infringement case. The description of elements of damage in discovery or anywhere else, respectfully, does not alter the fact of what is actually claimed in the case is those damages that are recoverable in a copyright infringement case.
So the language claims for damages asserted in this action does not include claims for damages asserted in the action in an interrogatory answer in response to a question that says, what are your claims for damages in this action? It just doesn't work for me.
It does not include breach of contract damages, though they may have been included in the discovery answer. That's our position, Judge, Your Honor.
But aren't they the same damages? I mean, I confess that I misspoke when I used the phrase contribution. What I should have said was double recovery. Why isn't this a double recovery, irrespective of the release? I mean, the argument on the release is a very attractive argument as well, but why isn't this a double recovery?
May I shift to that first by pointing out that in the release, the language releasing the co-defendant, which clearly intended to release all claims of any kind or nature, not just those asserted in a copyright infringement action, is obviously much broader and different than the language used in the release of Modern. And the release also recites that, or requires that the copyright infringement action be dismissed, does not mention dismissal of the then-pending state court action seeking breach of contract damages. And to the extent, Mr. Justice, that there might be potential double recovery, that's not a bar to a separate action. The Katzenberger case and the Cox case discuss that you adjust the damages to prevent double recovery, but it doesn't operate as a bar to recovery of appropriate damages. And in this case, the breach of contract damages, which of course are lost profits, have nothing to do with infringement. It's just as the damages sought in the infringement case have nothing to do with breach of contract. And that is the position that we successfully asserted in front of two distinguished Virginia Beach jurists who overruled the plea of release. And I think appropriately and properly, and Judge Lilly, and he wrote an opinion letter, which is in the record, setting forth his reasoning, which we, of course, fully endorse. And to the extent that there is potential for double recovery, and in Judge O'Brien's opinion letter deciding this case, he essentially said that he was denying recovery for the $3,550 design fee because it presented a potential for double recovery with respect to the copyright infringement action. So he made that adjustment. And if we get past the release argument, the res judicata issue,
I have one question that follows on the Chief Justice's question. And I was just looking at the record to see if I could find the answer. Does the record reflect how much your client was paid under the release?
Yes, it's $30,000. It's in the release document itself. That would be...
Don't take your time to...
It's paid $236 of the appendix.
Thank you.
$30,000, and the trial court gave you a credit on the double recovery theory of how much?
$3,550. It denied that as well as other components of damage which it deemed had not been established sufficiently clearly in the amount of $14,000-some-odd, and then denied the claim for lost commissions, which is the subject of my cross error. And if I may just address that briefly, the court denied the commission claim, which amounts to some $24,780.07, denied that commission claim on the grounds that it was consequential damages not within the contemplation of the parties, when the record makes clear that it plainly was in the contemplation of the parties. In fact, when CDSI was seeking to discuss possible ways forward with Modern Environment after it had sent the termination letter, it specifically suggested that part of the way forward would be we'd like to split the commission if we have to purchase the furniture on Modern's behalf. So clearly it was aware of the commissions, and as Plaintiff's Exhibit 10 shows, the General Service Administration had issued a letter to CDSI authorizing and directing that it have Modern order this furniture for this particular project. And as the record showed without any dispute, the General Services Administration's arrangements with the vendors from whom Modern would order the furniture included a commission structure for the vendor, such as Modern, and a commission was paid in all such cases. And plainly, CDSI knew that because they asked in the email that is on page 220 of the appendix for Modern to split its commission. And so clearly that was not consequential damages beyond the contemplation of the parties. And so our position is that the release in the copyright infringement action in federal court plainly is limited to release of those claims which were asserted in the copyright infringement action. The claims asserted in the copyright infringement action are in the complaint, in the prayer for relief.
Well, there weren't. It's not a release of rights of action. It's a release of claims of damages. Well, so you can have a claim of damages associated with a breach of contract, you have a claim of damages associated with a tortious interference, etc.
I respectfully disagree in that the release speaks to release of claims for damages asserted in the action. And the action is the complaint. The action is that defined, described, and alleged in the complaint.
The action and is the law, is the civil lawsuit.
I'm sorry?
The action is the civil action. It's the whole action. And if you're making claims at trial or making claims in interrogatory answers damages, go ahead.
The only relief to which Modern would be entitled in the copyright infringement action would be that relief for which it prayed in the complaint. And that is what it released. That is the case that was settled.
Why didn't you say that in the settlement agreement, that we're only waiving claims that were recoverable under Federal Copyright Act?
In this discussion, I certainly wish we had, but we didn't. And again, I would point out the fact that the language used to release the co-defendant, New Day, was much broader and clearly contemplated a release of any claims of any kind or nature connected in any way with the NH-140 project on the Navy base, whereas the release language with Modern Environments was restricted to the claims for damages asserted in that action. Again, the context being that the breach of contract action was then pending in Virginia Beach General District Court. Circuit Court. That one subsequently was non-suited after the plea of release was made and rejected by Judge Lilly and then reinstated. But that action was pending at the time of the settlement of the copyright infringement action, and whereas the settlement agreement called for dismissal of the copyright infringement action, naturally, if the parties had contemplated that this release was ending the breach of contract action, surely the settlement agreement would have provided for dismissal of that pending action as well.
Well, counsel, the action is actually defined in the release agreement, isn't it? It's defined on the first page. The action is defined on the first
page.
As
the federal court copyright infringement action. Yes. And turning, if I might, to res judicata, I frankly don't follow the appellant's reasoning there. The breach of contract action accrued and was full-blown upon the sending of the January 26th, I believe it was, termination letter, which purported to fire Modern from this particular job. And that action was then complete. Nothing remained to be done in order to allow that a claim for breach of contract to go forward. There didn't have to be a copyright infringement action. There didn't have to be a copyright infringement. It doesn't necessarily follow from or arise out of the same transaction or occurrence. It's merely coincidental that it's connected to this NH-140 job on the Navy base, but the copyright infringement is completely separate and apart. Didn't happen until after the breach of contract claim is full blown, and arises only because CDSI handed over the plans that it had obtained from Modern to its replacement subcontractor. That is a separate and distinct transaction, having no necessary connection or no logical connection to the breach of contract. And so I think the res judicata argument fails, and the court has said recently, and I believe it's Lee versus Spoden, that in determining whether the subsequent action involves the same conduct, transaction, or occurrence, the court's focus is on whether that action is based on the same or a different cause of action. And clearly, as has been discussed and is beyond dispute, the breach of contract and copyright infringement actions are entirely separate and distinct, one of which has to be brought in federal court, the other which could be brought under ancillary jurisdiction, but wasn't because it was already pending before the copyright infringement action was filed. Again, with respect to our assignment of cross error, the damages were reduced by Judge O'Brien to eliminate the lost commissions of $24,780.07 on the grounds that it was consequential damages, and CDSI's own documents show that the commissions were within its contemplation when it entered into this contract with MEI, and so those damages should be recoverable. And so we ask that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed with the addition of the $24,000 in commission damages and final judgment be entered. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Modern argues that its federal claim didn't include breach of contract damages, and that may or may not be, but in the interrogatory answer, Modern was specifically asked to itemize all damages that it claimed as a result of the copyright infringement, and it listed those damages, and then it later claimed those damages in a breach of contract action. Whether they were breach of contract damages or asserted in the federal court claim or not, they were identified as damages that Modern had sustained as a result of the alleged infringement in the federal court action and were later asserted as damages that Modern claimed as a result of alleged breach of contract in the state court action.
Can I stop you just for a second? Because my understanding of your position is whether or not those damages were actually recoverable in the federal cause of action is irrelevant.
Exactly.
They were claimed anyway.
They were claimed. Modern should not be permitted to avoid its release by saying that it was not permitted by law to recover the damages that it claimed in the federal court action. Cases are often settled regularly where there's a dispute or a disagreement over whether the damages claimed in the case are recoverable under the law. We settle those kinds of cases all the time where there's a legal dispute, not just a factual dispute, as to whether the damages claimed are actually lawfully recoverable. This is no different. Modern claim.
Counsel, that complaint just identifies a claim for $100,000 in damages, but there's no, other than this interrogatory, there's no other place that identifies with specificity what those damages are, is there?
Federal court. Yeah. I believe it does say it seeks actual damages.
Right, but in other words, it doesn't itemize, exactly, this is you know, this aspect, this aspect, this aspect. It just it has a broad demand for...
It does not itemize those things, but in the interrogatory answer, it does. And in the testimony of Mr. Harrison in the trial court in Virginia Beach Circuit Court, he admitted that the damages, that the evidence that of the damages that he was asserting in the trial court were the same damages that he asserted in the federal court. So it's undisputed that the damages asserted in the state court action were the same as asserted in the federal court action. He admitted that in his testimony throughout. My time is up.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.